Right now, a new review published in the prestigious journal Science is shaking up the timeline of human migration out of Africa. Up until now, the conventional timeline put that at about 60-ish thousand years ago. Now they say there's tons of evidence pointing way, way earlier.
That's one of the top 10 science stories of the year, according to Discover magazine. Gemma Tarlak is a senior editor at Discover, which is based in Waukesha. Gemma, welcome back to Central Time.
Hello, and happy science to you both.
Well, hi. So before we get to the story about human migration, one of the biggest stories in 2017 in science was how the current administration is affecting science. Discover created a timeline about that. Why did you call it Science Under Siege But Surviving?
Well, I think we really wanted to kind of capture the zeitgeist, as it were, for science research, researchers, people who hope to be researchers one day, and also how science is viewed by the current administration. And, you know, it's been a challenging year. There have been a lot of very significant proposed cuts. There have been a lot of rollbacks of science-driven policy. And at the same time, you know, all hope is not lost. If you look at Facebook feeds, sometimes you can feel that people are really distressed over how science is viewed. But the fact is, there's also a lot of promise. A lot more scientists are making their voices heard. And so it's a tough year. It's been a tough year, but there are signs of hope.
So in timeline form, what kinds of events did you include as you went through the last year or so?
Well, you know, of course, on the positive side, we have more than 100,000 people gathered in April in Washington, D.C. for the March for Science. That's an unprecedented number for science. Plus, on all seven continents, you know, people were making their voices heard in sister events. And at the same time, we have other stories, such as rollbacks of executive orders, for example, to make sure that federal properties are protected from climate change, and the actual term climate change falling out of favor and researchers being told you can't say climate change, you need to say extreme weather. And obviously, the big story was in June, the decision to withdraw the U.S. from the Paris Accord, which seeks, of course, to flatline greenhouse emissions by 2050. That is huge for people who take climate change seriously, because it is a serious thing.
So we are in this new administration, and it feels as though sometimes we're getting a lot of news out there. And I think we sometimes don't necessarily think of an overlap between science and politics, not saying that it isn't there. So how has Discover navigated our current political climate and how it is affecting the science world?
Well, you know, it's interesting. This is not a new territory for us. For example, in last year's Year in Science review, we talked about how Brexit was going to affect researchers. And it's not just affecting individual researchers in terms of possibly having to leave the country where they're doing their research, but also, you know, there are all these projects, all these collaborations that were thrown into jeopardy by Brexit. So it's not unusual for us to cover politics when it impacts science. And so it was very important to us to just give our readers the information, and as, you know, objectively as we could. And we have no interest in wading into the political waters out there. And so we just wanted to remind people that there has been this series of decisions that is going to directly affect and is already affecting how research is done, how research is funded, how research results are viewed. And we think that's very important.
We're talking to Gemma Tarlak, senior editor at Discover magazine based in Waukesha. We're starting our look at some of the big stories in science of 2017. We'll pick that up also next week at about this time. And Gemma, a story we've talked about in bits and pieces with you, and now it's starting to come together. We're changing the timeline, staying with timelines of when modern-ish humans, started to spread around the world. A big article, big review of what's out there in the journal Science. What's going on?
Yeah, and you know, that's, it's interesting because this big review came out last Thursday in Science saying we have to really rewrite the human migration story. I learned in school, and probably you guys did as well, that the species Homo sapiens evolved probably around 200,000 years ago, evolved into modern humans about 100,000 years ago in Africa and then left Africa about 50,000 years ago. All of that this year has been thrown by the wayside. And even though science came out, as I said last Thursday, with this big story saying, hey, it's time to rewrite the timeline, I've been seeing these other stories just pop all year, thinking, oh my gosh, this is the year when they're going to rewrite the timeline. and sure enough, you know, they did. Obviously, our magazine was already at the publisher by the time Science printed their big review, but we do have in our Year in Science issue just kind of an overview of all these different studies that it now appears that our species evolved twice as long ago as we thought. We already have fossils from about 300,000 years ago that from Morocco that show Homo sapiens were around much earlier than we thought. And the amount of evidence we have outside of Africa that shows our species had moved outside of Africa much earlier than we thought, it really reached a tipping point this year. And so the researchers are finally moving towards a new consensus that Homo sapiens evolved 300,000 to 400,000 years ago and began leaving Africa more than 100,000 years ago in various waves. So there were multiple waves rather than just one huge migration out of Africa.
So this is a big history to look back on, 300,000 years. What does this mean for, I guess, what we think of as, I guess, paleoanthropology? How might it change in the coming decades?
Well, you know, that's always the question, like, what is the next fossil just right under the surface waiting to be discovered? And I think one of the great things about this new consensus shift is for decades, there were paleoanthropologists very senior in their field who kind of, you know, laid down the law, like, no, this is the story. Homo sapiens are no older than 200,000 years, and they never left Africa before 50 or 60,000 years ago. And now finally, I think what we're seeing here in this shift, this call to rewrite the timeline, is really that the field as a whole is saying, okay, guys, let's face it. The evidence no longer supports that model. And what I think it does, it frees paleoanthropologists now as they find new things to come up with new models and new ideas. They're not so kind of stuck in the old way of thinking.
And part of the story here is, as I understand it, the interaction between what we would call modern humans and some of the other offshoots on our family tree, some of the predecessors of humans, Homo erectus, the Denisovians? Am I saying that one right?
Denisovans.
There you go. There were like different permutations of human-ish people out there. So what are we starting to learn about how we got along with them?
Well, in terms of the Neanderthals and the Denisovans, they are other members of the Homo genus that were around at about the same time we were, more or less. And what we're finding is that we knew there was episodes of interbreeding with our species and the Neanderthals, with the Neanderthals and the Denisovans, with the Denisovans and us. I mean, let's face it, you know, when humans get together, stuff happens. And what they're finding now is that it is also going much further back in time. There was a paper out this summer that found that a Homo sapiens woman actually contributed mitochondrial DNA, that's the maternally inherited DNA, she actually contributed that to the Neanderthal gene pool as long ago as 470,000 years ago. So obviously, that means Homo sapiens are older than we thought, and they were meeting Neanderthals a lot earlier than we thought. That's just one paper, and it's just looking at genetic evidence from one fossil. So it's not quite, we're not quite ready for a consensus shift on that particular point, but we are finding, like I said, all this evidence that we were around earlier in time, and we were around earlier in geography in terms of how far Homo sapiens traveled early.
So there's also not necessarily an alternative timeline, but there are some theories that maybe Homo sapiens evolved kind of where they were regionally. You go a little bit into depth in your article about that. Can you explain that to us?
Yeah, sure. You know, for years, again, this general consensus model that is falling by the wayside now, it held that Homo sapiens evolved in Africa. And then once we were fully modern Homo sapiens, we left Africa. And that's been the general model. And at the same time, there has been a smaller group of researchers arguing for something called the regional continuity model. And they believe that Homo erectus, who was around 2 million years ago, way before we were, Homo erectus evolved in Africa and then left Africa. And we do have a handful of sites. There's one in the Republic of Georgia and the Caucasus. There's more in Asia. There are a few sites that show Homo erectus did reach way far out of Africa. And these populations of Homo erectus, they were successful in their little areas, in their little territories, whether it be in China or in Georgia or in other places. They lived there. They evolved. And then when these modern Homo sapiens came out of Africa, whenever that happened, they interbred with these already established populations. So the regional continuity model is not that all modern Homo sapiens came from Africa, but that populations that we see, say, in China or in, for example, again, Central Asia, some of these populations are actually rooted in archaic Homo erectus populations that were there all the time, that never left these places, but then interbred with Homo sapiens later. So it's kind of a fine gradation in the different models in some ways, but basically the regional continuity model is now gaining a lot of interest as we find more and more fossils that suggest this might be a thing.
Well, Gemma, I like this story as an example of how science works. We've got a model in place based on the best information we had. A piece of information, a piece of evidence comes along that contradicts it. Maybe you doubt the evidence. Another piece, well, you might doubt that. But at some point, you hit this tipping point where there's enough evidence where you have to go back and say, hey, maybe that model isn't quite right after all.
Exactly. I mean, that's the scientific method in work, that you come up with a hypothesis, and then you keep trying to test that hypothesis, and you refine it as you go. And then there comes a point where you realize that hypothesis is not working anymore. So you come up with a new one. You come up with a new model. That's what we're seeing now. And it's for me, as someone who covers this day in, day out, it's really exciting to actually see this shift happening right before my eyes. So I think it's a very cool time to be studying human origins and learning about them. And I'm sure we'll have a lot more to talk about in the next year.
And Gemma, I've heard people talk about this in the way we teach and learn science. Maybe we shouldn't be so focused on memorizing the date that we currently think humans did this or that. We should be focusing on the methods and evaluating the evidence and being scientists ourselves instead of learning the science facts that other scientists have passed along.
Exactly, exactly. And I think, you know, whenever you hear, for example, hey, we found a new fossil of a human ancestor and it's 3 million years old, that you should look at that skeptically and look at the research. And, you know, if you can, I always recommend for readers and listeners to go in and read some of these academic papers. Even if you don't have a background in it, you read enough of them, you'll be able to understand them very well, and you'll be able to see for yourself the evidence and weigh that evidence and really kind of think critically about the theories and the hypotheses, because that's really how science advances, by people thinking critically and looking for the model that makes the most sense given the evidence you have.
Gemma, thanks a lot. Good to talk to you again.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
That's Gemma Tarlak, senior editor at Discover Magazine, based in Waukesha. She joined us to look back at a couple of the biggest stories in science in 2017. By the way, we're going to pick up more of the big stories in science coming up next week, Monday after 3:30.